Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. What I Learned About Happiness in Africa by Rick Lee E. is a short personal reflection and cross-cultural memoir about happiness, work, and social life. The book is based on the experience of an engineer who lived in Africa for 4 years, worked for a startup, went through the pandemic lockdown, and eventually left employment to open a restaurant. Rather than presenting a formal study of happiness, it uses lived experience as its main evidence. Its central purpose is to examine how immersion in a different social environment can unsettle inherited assumptions about ambition, material progress, productivity, and personal fulfillment. The perspective is explicitly shaped by a Western lens encountering African social norms, which gives the book both its strength and its limitation. It is most useful as an account of personal transformation through cultural comparison, especially for readers interested in how everyday relationships and community practices can alter ideas of a meaningful life. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a Western framework tested against African everyday life. One of the central features of What I Learned About Happiness in Africa is the contrast between a Western view of achievement and the social values the author observes while living in Africa. The book does not appear to argue that one culture has a complete answer to happiness. Instead, it places a familiar framework of competition, consumerism, and career advancement under pressure by showing how it can look narrower when viewed from another society. This matters because ideas about happiness are often treated as private preferences when they are also shaped by institutions, habits, and social expectations. The author enters the setting as an engineer, with assumptions formed by professional success and economic productivity, then begins to notice that those assumptions do not fully explain the value people attach to relationships, presence, and shared life. The result is not a systematic cultural theory, but a personal test of inherited beliefs. Its value lies in making readers ask which parts of their own definition of happiness are truly chosen, and which are absorbed from the environments they inhabit. Secondly, work and achievement reconsidered through startup life. The book uses the author experience in a startup as a concrete entry point into larger questions about work. A startup environment usually rewards urgency, problem-solving, and measurable progress, especially for someone trained as an engineer. By placing that background within a new cultural context, the narrative can examine how professional identity shapes the meaning of success. The important issue is not simply whether the job was satisfying, but how work can become the main source of status and self-definition. Living in Africa appears to disrupt that pattern by exposing the author to different rhythms of social life and different ways of measuring a good day or a good life. This makes the book relevant to readers who feel that career achievement has become difficult to separate from personal worth. It suggests that work can remain meaningful without occupying the entire moral center of life. The startup setting is therefore not just biographical detail. It is the stage on which the author begins to reassess productivity, ambition, and the cost of defining happiness mainly through professional outcomes. Thirdly, pandemic lockdown is a forced pause in self-understanding. The pandemic lockdown forms an important context because it intensifies the themes of isolation, dependence, and reevaluation. For many people, lockdown made ordinary routines unavailable and exposed how much identity depended on work, movement, consumption, and social access. In this book, that disruption happens while the author is already living outside his original cultural environment, which gives the experience a sharper reflective function. The lockdown is not merely a historical backdrop. It becomes a condition under which assumptions about stability and control are tested. When external plans are interrupted, the question of happiness becomes less theoretical and more immediate what remains when familiar forms of progress are delayed or suspended. The book seems to use this period to deepen its interest in relationships and resilience, rather than treating happiness as constant positivity. Its significance lies in showing that a crisis can reveal the difference between comfort and fulfillment. The pandemic setting also prevents the memoir from becoming a simple travel account because it introduces constraint, uncertainty, and the need to rethink practical choices under pressure. Fourthly, opening a restaurant as a shift from career identity to relational enterprise. The decision to leave a job and start a restaurant is a major turning point because it translates reflection into action. In the context of the book, the restaurant does not function only as a business venture. It represents a movement away from a narrow professional path and toward a form of work built around hospitality, contact, and local participation. This is important because happiness in the book is not presented only as an internal mental state. It is connected to how a person spends time, whom they serve, and what kinds of daily exchanges shape their sense of belonging. A restaurant depends on relationships in direct and visible ways: suppliers, staff, customers, shared meals, and repeated encounters. That makes it a practical contrast to more abstract models of success based only on career rank or income. The author's shift also shows that cultural learning can have material consequences. It can change choices about livelihood, risk, and purpose. The episode gives the book a grounded dimension because it moves beyond observation into a redesigned way of living. Lastly, personal testimony rather than a universal theory of African happiness. A crucial way to read what I learned about happiness in Africa is as personal testimony rather than as a complete account of an entire continent. The title is broad, but the available description indicates that the book is grounded in one person's experience over 4 years, filtered through Western eyes. This makes its insights accessible and emotionally direct, yet it also means the reader should not treat its observations as sociological proof. Africa contains many countries, languages, economies, histories, and social structures, so any single memoir can only illuminate a limited set of encounters. The strength of this approach is that it avoids abstraction and begins with lived change, a career, a lockdown, relationships, and a business decision. The limitation is that the lessons depend on perspective and context. Recognizing this limitation actually improves the reading experience. It allows the book to be valued for what it does, while showing how cross-cultural life can challenge assumptions about happiness. It is not a definitive map of African values, but a reflective account of how one outsider was changed by them. In conclusion, what I learned about happiness in Africa is best suited to readers who enjoy reflective memoirs, cross-cultural observation, and practical questions about how work, community, and identity shape well-being. It will particularly interest people who have lived abroad, are considering a major career change, or feel dissatisfied with conventional measures of achievement. Its practical benefit is not a step-by-step method for becoming happier, but a framework for noticing how social surroundings influence personal priorities. Intellectually, it encourages readers to question the assumption that prosperity, competition, and professional advancement automatically produce fulfillment. The book stands out for many happiness titles because it does not rely on laboratory research, productivity advice, or generalized self-help formulas. Its distinguishing feature is the combination of personal relocation, startup work, pandemic disruption, and the move into restaurant ownership. These elements make the subject concrete rather than purely philosophical. At the same time, readers should approach it as one reflective account, not as a comprehensive explanation of African societies. Its strongest contribution is the way it uses a specific life experience to make familiar Western habits seem less inevitable. Compared with broader books on happiness, it is narrower, more personal, and more culturally situated, which gives it a distinctive place among contemporary reflections on meaningful living. If you would like to support Rick Lee E., you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.